All right, so this is what we call the afterburn. Okay, so if you have comments or questions, you can raise your hand if you're here, and Steve will bring around the mic. If you're on the live stream, Kurt's over there with Rob. Rob's going to probably be the one on the mic, but they will make note of your comments or questions that are for this teaching. Now, let's try to keep the questions and comments directed to what I talked about today. If I touched on a side subject that you have a lot of issues with or questions about because you're new to this stuff and you haven't heard the teachings that I did on those subjects, we would ask that you would either go to the links that I'm sure they're posting to those teachings and listen to the teachings first. And then, if you listen to the teaching and still have questions, please feel free to contact us and we can answer your questions. Okay, who would like to go first? Okay, in the back, Ken's got his hand up.
The very last verse, the 74, I happen to notice that it says, for I have waited for your word, the number, or the letter W is capitalized. This first notice that I've seen of that, there's usually capitalized Torah, and it said capitalized your name once in verse 55, but would this by any chance be a foreshadow to the word being Yeshua?
It could be. It certainly could be. And by the way, bear in mind that it's the arbitrary choices of the translators to put capital letters because there are no capital letters in Hebrew. But they're trying to make an important point that out of respect, that anything that's connected to the above gets a capital letter. The word, the name. You know, these are all things that are connected, you know, when it says, and he did this, or he did, so the capital H would be there if it's talking about Yahweh. So it's trying to just, you know, give that, you know, understanding to us that it's dealing with the above. And so, but could these things, anytime it talks about the word, okay, I've talked about this from an amplifying sort of view, not like the Amplified Bible, but like the idea of amplifying, like the Amplified Bible tries to do. When you see the word Torah or word or instruction or light or truth, these are all things that we should be immediately connecting with Yeshua, okay? So absolutely, when it talks about, you know, the Torah of your mouth is better to me than thousands, well, that's Yeshua's the walking, talking Torah, okay? He says, for I've waited on your word. I'm waiting on Messiah. I'm waiting on the Torah. I'm waiting on the truth. I'm waiting on the light. All those things fit together. Okay, Steve, do you want to say something?
Yes. In 53... how you talked about rage, it's so I'm not saying it's okay yet. Most of us have a button that you talked about. If push brings rage upon us, but having rage seize us may be a thing. However, if, I emphasize if we contain our emotion, and I know that's a big button for some of the teachings that you do with controlling our emotions, and we refrain from allowing our emotions to drive, then we can demonstrate the fruit of the Spirit.
Amen. And I did resist the urge to go beep, boop, 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 beep. Okay. No, look, I know personally, and probably some of you do, probably not all of you, but I know personally people that when something happened in their life, the rage caused them to walk away. Sometimes it was the loss of a spouse, and they were so angry with the Creator for allowing it to happen, or something that happened to a child. And the guy, so rage can cause you to forsake the law. Okay, here he's talking about rage seized them because of those who did, but also understand from what Steve was kind of going at, you can get yourself in a place where you're emotionally out of control with anger, and that rage can cause you to basically lose it, to walk away. And I've seen people do that. They get offended, they get angry, and they walk away. There are people that did that with Yeshua even. They got angry and they walked away. We've seen that happen here. People have gotten angry and they've walked away. The problem wasn't whatever they were angry about. The problem was that they were angry about, that they were raging. Emotional balance. There's not going, can we all agree that there is probably zero possibility and probability that there will be emotionally unbalanced people in the kingdom? I'm not saying if you're emotionally unbalanced, you're not going to get there. I'm saying that you're going to become balanced. And that's part of what Yahweh's teaching you so that you can be that way when you get there. And almost all of us are unbalanced. You know, My wife and I were talking yesterday about, you know, dealing with people, and some are diagnosed and some are undiagnosed, and we talked about how we need to have a certain level of patience and understanding when dealing with people, but everybody could be diagnosed. What do I mean by that? All of us have areas in our life that are deficient, sufficiently to handicap you, or out of whack, overabundant, in order to cause you to be handicapped in some way. You know, I often, and it may sound like bragging to people, but it's not, when I say, well, I've only got two colors when we do the color personality test. Well, that means I'm absolutely out of balance. Somebody like, well, we know that. Okay. But that deficiency and having such an extreme amount of one and zero of the other is a handicap. So you can almost consider doing a personality test as a diagnosis. It can let you know where you have handicapping weaknesses and handicapping deficiencies because you have too much of something. So you actually can't function right because you have too much of something. So I use the word deficiency, wrong word, but you have too much. And so that can get out of balance. See, we don't just need to be said, well, this person's schizophrenic or this person's autistic or this person's got this. Those are the world's diagnostic. But we should already know that if you have a problem with your anger, if you have a problem with anxiety, if you have a, all of these negative emotional places are handicapping you. But everybody has something like that. Just because you don't have the one that you're looking at the other person having, they don't have the one you have necessarily. And how do we treat each other? Because, well, until recently, I think it's starting to finally change, having some sort of handicap was always a stigma. We don't want to talk about that because people will look at somebody like somehow they're deficient. And we're all that way, that would be different. But we are. We absolutely are. Okay? I am a handicapped person. There's no two ways about it. I had a house full of people at my house for 4th of July, and I was inside the house by myself because I just did not feel comfortable doing this. I couldn't do the blue thing. Why? I am deficient in that. I wasn't upset being inside. I just couldn't be happy outside. If you understand what I'm saying, it's a socially handicapping problem. And the more extreme you may have on one side of something, that means you have to have a handicap in the other. Think of it that way. If the balance in life, let's say we use something like, I'll use an example. Let's say that 100 points or whatever it is, 100 is what balances out your life. And let's say there's five areas of your life. So a perfectly balanced person would have 20, 20, 20, 20, and 20. But let's say one part of your life is 40. That means that somewhere else is going to be less than 20. Does that make sense? So like somebody like goes, oh man, I wish I was a genius. No, a genius is someone who has an extreme somewhere, which means there's going to be a deficiency somewhere else. I wish I had that extreme talent at this or that or the other thing. You see somebody playing an instrument or doing art or maybe whatever it is, they're going to be deficient in something because they have an extreme balance the other way in something else. That's why you watch a lot of very talented people implode. And you wonder, why would they kill themselves? They had all of this going for them. No, they had so much of that going for them that there was an area that was so out of balance the other way. So they couldn't focus and cope. All of you have this problem to some degree, every one of you. And if we could understand that, because you look at somebody who's raging, but you do something just as challenging, but maybe not like they do. Maybe you're much more quiet, so you don't rage, but instead you end up with ulcers. Because the raging person screaming, the other person keeps it inside, is ruining their insides. Both of you are hurting yourselves. Okay, so one's going to have a heart attack from screaming, the other one's going to just wreck their insides with ulcers. Two negative reactions to the same stimulus, right? So if we could start to recognize that all of us are handicapped because of what we're good at, if the better you are at something, the more handicapped you're going to be in something else. I'm just telling you that just so you understand. You know, I've said it often, it comes around. Look, I have a genius IQ. That's not to brag. That makes my life miserable on a lot of levels. Because that is an out of balance part of me. That means that I'm less than, I have less than I need to be really functional in some other area. Now, it comes in real handy in the way I piece the puzzle, and Yahweh uses that aspect of pattern seeing and everything else that I can do when I teach Torah. But it handicaps me because I had to give up something else in my life, so I have less ability to be social and to develop relationships the way that people do it. So people think, man, he's so rude and this and that. I'm handicapped. And that's not an excuse. I can work on the handicap. By the way, being handicapped doesn't mean, well, it is what it is and you're stuck with it. No, it means that's something I don't do naturally, but I can choose to try to do it consciously. It makes more effort. Okay? Okay, there are handicapped people that can't write very well, but with a lot of effort, they can write. You understand what I'm saying? Or they can't read very well, but with a lot of effort, they can read. The handicapping means it's harder for you to do something. Okay? So just because a handicap's not physical, it doesn't matter. You can take a physical handicap. Someone that may have a physical handicap with their legs makes it harder for them to get around. They can still maybe use a wheelchair, or they could use crutches or a walker, but it's harder to do, right? Well, guess what? If you have an emotional handicap or psychological emotional handicap, that means there are things in life that should be easier for you to do or very hard for you to do. And if you know that everybody has one, you might be a little more patient with them. Well, that person, blah, 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 blah. Well, what about you? Somebody could look at you and say that blah, 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 blah about you, whatever that is, some negative thing, right? So don't worry about diagnosed or not. You're all undiagnosed. You all have something that could be diagnosed. How's that? That's my totally unlicensed, unprofessional opinion. But as a ministry person, having talked to so many of you, not just here, but like people over time, I can tell you this is absolutely 100% true, okay? And that's why you should even feel more comfortable. Go get diagnosed. Maybe at least you figure out what the problem is. You can work on it. If you struggle, then you probably can find out what it is that's causing you to struggle and maybe work on it. Maybe you're allergic to something and it's a chemical deficiency. Maybe it's just an area that now that you recognize is a handicap, you can then make the effort to get better at the thing that you struggle with. Because people might have thought of me as being antisocial. Man, we're all at his house and he's not out here with us. And some of you think, but we know you're a social rabbi. You go to Five Guys and everything else. If you've ever been there, watch me when you're there. If I'm not doing some instructional rabbi type thing, I'm sitting there quietly looking at my phone or some other thing. I'm serious. Pay attention. Or if I'm at your house, if nobody needs me for anything to do the sort of the red rabbi type stuff, I'm just sitting there in my own world not knowing what to do. Because it can look like I'm being social when I'm not. So I'm going to talk about me because I don't know about how to talk about you, but I'm saying, see, this is the whole thing. Some of you may think, oh man, I wish I was like that person. All this stuff comes so easy to them. Yes, that may come easy to them, but there's some other area that you're not aware of that you don't get to see all the time that they struggle mightily with because the other thing is coming easy to them. Okay? It has to do with the balance problem, okay? And so the whole point was, we need to get our emotional balance so that we can succeed in the kingdom. The kingdom's gonna be very social. I'm gonna have to figure out how to get there. I'm serious, as far as the social part. The kingdom's gonna be, nobody's gonna be depressed in the kingdom. Nobody's gonna have anxiety in the kingdom. Nobody's gonna worry about anything in the kingdom. Whatever word I trigger that's actually you, realize that that's someplace you can get to because in the kingdom that won't be there, okay? So when I might look at you like, because someone said to me the other day about being stressed, I said, I don't get stressed. Now you said, so then they saw me get frustrated with something. Frustration is not stress. I went to do something and something was impeding my progress. I was trying to unlock something and the key wouldn't go in right. They said, oh, I thought you said you don't get stressed. I said, I'm not stressed. I'm frustrated because the thing is slowing me down. Stress is a fear-based thing, okay? If I actually thought that I'd never get it open, then I could be stressed. I'm never gonna get this thing open. Do you see the difference? So in your life, you have whatever you have. It could be an anxiety, it could be this or that, or you have other people have them and you don't understand why they have that because you don't. Well, I never have anxiety. Yeah, but other people do. I don't have any social problems, but other people do. I don't have decision-making problems, but other people do. I don't, just whatever it is, realize other people do. All right? And we have to get to that full wholeness. Do you realize that everybody in the kingdom, we often think about this physically, that do you think anybody's going to have problems walking in the kingdom? No? Are there going to be any physical handicaps in the kingdom? No? Okay. Why do we think that the same wouldn't be true for the psychological and the emotional? Here's the difference. You were born with the physical, or you had an accident that caused the physical, and he'll just restore that by fiat. The psychological and emotional, some of that you were born with, and he'll restore that. Some of it you learned, or you need to learn to struggle with and overcome, and he's going to expect you to do the parts you can. Some you were born with. There are people that absolutely have psychological, emotional stuff that had to do with they were born with a chemical problem or some other, whatever it is going on mechanically. He'll fix that. But the stuff that you can, it always comes down to, he expects you to do what you can. I was born out of balance in certain areas, but it doesn't mean I can't learn to get my rage when I get frustrated with something under control. I can learn to do that. You can learn to trust if you have a trust issue to some degree, right? You can learn to get some of your anxiety under control. You can learn to get some of your fears under control. You can learn to get some of your judgmentalism. Oh, that's a big one. You can learn not to be offended as much. You're right, we can learn a lot of this stuff. We have to. And that's the bigger struggle. I don't even know what the question was that got me off on all that stuff, but hey, okay? All right, let me add one more thing to this. This came to me last night. Sometimes these things that come to me, and I wish they didn't come to me at night because I forget. I'm too lazy to get out of the bed. I got the face mask on because of the CPAP and the whole thing, and I got to put it all back on. So I don't want to write it down so I don't forget, but I remembered this one. This is for all you husbands and wives especially, but also for those with your friends, with your family members, with your kids. I want you to think about your relationship in terms of what they need from you, which is why you have a relationship from them. In other words, if you're, let's say you struggle with your wife or your husband or your kid or whatever it is, you're always thinking about what they're supposed to give you or how they're supposed to help you. No, if you're struggling with them, maybe it's because they need you to be something they need. Not what you think they need, but what they actually need. Okay? Maybe that's why Yahweh allowed or put you together, because there's something that you can do to be what they need you to be. Even though they're going to drive you insane, they're going to push your buttons, boop, 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 whatever it is, right? But he's allowed it because you need to grow into the person that could be what they need to help them become the person they need to be. But to do that, you have to get past you thinking you know what they need because you've decided, oh, you just need this. No, you need to figure out what they actually need. And the more they irritate you, the more that affliction trying to get your attention to learn what they need. Think of that. You know, you just want them to knock it off and do it because it's all about you now. But maybe you have an opportunity to do something for them. It's a hard one. All these, listen, I counsel, just like in the world, most marriages are in trouble. At least 3-4 days a week. And don't lie to me and tell me differently. I love people saying to me, oh, my wife and I, my husband and I, we never fight. You're not even married. You're lying. You're just telling people you're married. We are people. We do not naturally just blend in perfectly. But maybe you could look at the other person a little differently. Maybe all that stuff is so that you can be something for that handicapped person to help them with their struggle and their handicap. And then maybe they could do the same for you. Because when they're driving you crazy, you've got to remember, you're married to a handicapped person. No, they're not. They're perfectly healthy, but no, they're not. Every one of you who's married is married to a handicapped person. Maybe that would change your mindset when you look at them. Not in a look at them like whoa, your hand. No, like maybe you have compassion. See, we naturally tend to have compassion on the Down syndrome kid or the kid in the wheelchair that's obviously handicapped. And we feel like, oh, and then, but why wouldn't you feel that way about your spouse? They are just as handicapped, just maybe not as visibly handicapped. So are you. This isn't easy. But man, if we get our brain wrapped around that. By the way, when you're interacting with me, you better realize you're dealing with a handicapped guy. Stop expecting me to be something that I'm too handicapped to be at the moment. I'm growing. I'm trying. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of people have left here because, oh, Rabbi, you know. Well, sorry, I'm handicapped. Okay? The extreme ability that I do with the book means that there's other areas that are way deficient. That's what I taught you just now, right? So I have to use myself as the example. But don't think, well, you know, he must not really be the anointed, appointed, and teacher, whatever, blah, 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 because of this deficient area proves he's not. No, because that one has nothing to do with the other. The more extreme the one, the more the deficiency will be somewhere else. There's no way around that. That's the way we're, it's having a limited amount of something. If you have a lot of something, you have less of something somewhere else. There's only so much you can have. All right? Does that make sense? Hopefully that makes some sense to you. Look, if I want to make like a half and half sweet tea and unsweet tea, right? The cup only holds so much. If I put in a whole bunch of sweet tea, there's not a whole lot of room for the unsweet. If I wanted it to be balanced half and half, I can't now because there's already too much of the other one. So now I'm handicapped to get what I want. There's only room up to the top of the glass. And so I'm going to have to do something to balance that out, to make room for the one that's deficient. Does that make any sense? All right? Did you want it? Okay. Stephanie?
Well, I just wanted to welcome everybody to our counseling session here.
Yes.
It was really nice.
Group therapy.
Yeah. And I am still sitting right here as you're talking about me.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay.
No, she did that one time at a Sukkot. It was the funniest thing. We're standing in the kitchen, a bunch of us talking. She said, I am right here. You know, that's not polite when you talk.
Yeah. I feel like the Father's been, just even as you're talking in the afterburn, just confirming an awful lot of stuff. As many probably...
All of us should be feeling a little what she's feeling, because this should be a wake-up call to all of us. It should hit right there and say, this is really what I'm dealing with in my life. You know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you. This really has been a season of affliction for me and my family. Sorry.
And the good news is you have a bigger family around you to love on you while you're going through it.
But it does... because I've always felt this way, that as I go through stuff, I always ask the Father for, you know, what's the answer to this problem, whatever this problem is. I mean, you can fill in the blank any number of things. And the answer always seemed to came back to do the Torah. And that never made sense to me, because I was always like, what does that have to do with my problem? Like, then you'd search the Torah for where's the answer to my problem, and it's not there. And but yet that's effectively what you've been telling us today is, you know, the because I wrote down about going astray equals getting afflicted. And then the answer was, but now I've guarded your word. So it was the do Torah, right? That's always the answer. But I'm piecing together almost everything that you went back to today, because you ended up there, which is, your eyes aren't open. Now, you said that in relation to the Torah, but our eyes are also not always open to where we may have gone astray while we're in the affliction. We're not, I think there are some cases where we can really see, I did this and now I'm, you know, I mm-hmm. sowed this and I'm reaping this, mm-hmm. and it can be really obvious. But I think there's other times where you don't see where you went astray, mm-hmm. and you're in the affliction and you're trying to sit there and go, how did I get here? Mm-hmm. And now it's back to the Deuteronomy 29:4, which is, until I gave you the eyes to see and the ears to hear, you didn't know
right.
what it was. And it's kind of like being able to just sit back and go, okay, clearly I have to get back in line. I have to figure out what that is. But then in the afterburn, you came back to the idea of having compassion, because I think that's kind of where my heart was going with this, is when we're in the affliction... Mm-hmm. And we start to recognize that there's something that we've gone astray with, and we're not totally sure what it is. We need the compassion to be able to get back to doing the right thing. And so it just, anyway, thank you for the one-on-one that everyone else, you know, our 600 friends could come in on.
Well, this is our weekly MA meeting, Messianics Anonymous. And Hi, my name is. Look, the important thing also to understand is that, like Stephanie was trying to point out, as far as there are some things that you can, you know, clearly, linearly go, I did this, and that's why I'm suffering this. But when the did is not an action, but it's a wrong thought process, or it's a wrong, or it's a lack of trust, or it's not being within the structure properly, so it's more of a non-physical action, it's harder to recognize that that's where you go astray. Okay? So why am I in this affliction? Well, because maybe you're still not trusting him. Or you're not trusting your husband, or you're not trusting the ministry, you're not trusting the structure, there's something you're not trusting, okay? And that's hard because that's not an action the way we normally think. I worked on Shabbat and then thing went bad. Okay, that's an action, and then I can connect that action to something, okay? All right, I wake up in the morning and my shoulder just really feels bad, and then I remember that for the first time in 10 years, I tried throwing a football for 2 hours. Oh, an action led to something, right? But what if it's not something that linear, that simple? What if it's a thought process? Okay, wrong thinking brings all kinds of reaping, but yet it's not so obvious to us that it was a wrong thinking. Okay, and that's the tough part. And if you read the book, which I know you all do, the biggest problem in the book is that wrong mindset, the not trusting and not fearing him, but fearing everything else and not trusting him. And that's our problem. And that's going to bring affliction that helps us to readdress what's going on between our ears and in our hearts. Okay? So as opposed to sin, which is a breaking of the law, doing something you shouldn't do, this stuff is going on in your head, in your heart. It's really tough. And that takes a little bit, okay? Who's next? Okay, George?
So I want to make a statement, but I'm going to preface it by sharing a little bit about myself. So for probably 25 plus years, I knew there was something wrong with me that was undiagnosed. And it wasn't until I went through a great number of trials in my personal life, with respect to my family and everything I did professionally, that suffering led to me finally going to get diagnosed and finally discovering what was wrong with me. But what I recognized in the years that happened after that was that the understanding that knowing what was wrong had brought to light the fact that in all those years while I was coping and dealing with what I dealt with, I actually developed additional qualities and traits and attributes that surfaced in those years of coping. I bring that up with respect to what Rabbi was saying, and I want to make the statement, and that is, the trials and the tribulations and everything I went through, I would never trade for anyone because they have brought me here to serve this body. And I say that with respect to Rabbi because I'm glad you've gone through everything you went through. I'm glad you're made the way you're made because only because of you being made this way can you do what you do for us. So I wanted to just say that.
Amen. Amen. I mean, look, you know, I don't want to kind of, you know, overextend this, but for example, you know, some of you think when you hear the teachings, you know, that that's sort of the gift and the talent. No, the gift and talent is when I'm standing here with my mouth open, but to sit and write a teaching is, for me, literally torture, okay? You have to understand, I took English 1 in college 5 times. You know why I took it 5 times? Because they wanted us to write 5 papers. So each time I wrote 1, and the fifth time I just handed them all in. I can't write on demand. I can't focus linearly on a piece of paper. That's why if anybody ever gets my notes online, they wonder, but no, we want your notes. There never is any notes, because I can't sit there and literally coalesce that kind of thinking onto paper and commit to it. All I have in my notes is read Psalm 119, okay? And a little part at the front that says, make a recap about the 2 great commands. That's it, that's my whole notes. All right? Now, some of you think, wow, how can you? It's not wow. There's no other way I could do it. Do you understand? You know, my mother thought it was hysterical that I ended up in ministry where I had to write a sermon every week. I said, Mom, I'm not writing a sermon. Okay? Because she knows that I can't sit there and write. Okay? I took English, one of the times I took English one, the teacher said, okay, first thing I want you to do, I want to get a writing sample from everybody. Write me about what you did this summer. And I went right up to the teacher and said, look, that's not happening. I said, if I can go home and do it and take like the whole night to fight and do it, I can do it. If you want me to do it in an hour today in class, just tell me and I'll drop the class and take a different class. I just was being honest. She said, no, you can go home and do it. It took me 4 hours to do what everybody else did in 45 minutes in the class. Because I literally had to fight myself to do something that was that difficult for my brain to do in that way. All right? But yet, Yah provided a different balance for that. Fine, just get up there having studied it all out, what you needed to study, and just piece it together and let it come out of your mouth. So it's not that I don't put the study together, I just can't literally write it out. It's the reason, one of the reasons you don't have a committed to schedule yet for Sukkot, because I have a hard time committing things that I'd like to have options for. So to actually write it on the schedule means that now it's locked in, and I still want to have flexibility about a few things that I'm not sure about yet before I put it on there. All the things I know for sure are happening are on there, no problem. But that's part of my handicap, you know? So a lot of times when people ask me stuff, my answer is like, maybe, we'll see. My daughter will tell you we'll see means no. But, okay, maybe means it's actually got a shot, but... But I don't always like to make those commitments because of the way my brain works, and I like the flexibility of the options and that kind of thing. That's a challenge when you need to be able to make commitments and sometimes make decisions that affirm it. Other times, I make decisions, boom, 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 no problem. And I can't understand necessarily why sometimes it's easy and why it's not. But it's a struggle. But I appreciate that George made an important point to all of you. All the people around you, it's their handicaps and struggle with it that gives them all of the good stuff as well as the bad stuff. But that good stuff, that's part of how they became who they are. So without all that, they wouldn't be the person that you love. Now, without it, they also might not be the person that drives you nuts either. But it's a mixed bag, right? You love them, but they drive you crazy. Well, that's because they're out of balance. And why does it drive you crazy? Because you're out of balance. Why was Yeshua able to breeze through life so well? Because he was perfectly in balance. You see the difference? And so that's what we're hoping to get to. And don't worry about if you have some major, you know, thing. That which you are not expected to be able to do, he will do for you. Okay? There's no two ways about it. He will do that for you. That's always been the case. He will provide what you can't. There was no way they were going to split the sea. So he split it for them, all right? And so, but he expected them, though, to do what? Trust him, stand there, be quiet. That's their part. We still have a part to do. Do everything you can to do your part. And trust me, sometimes standing still and being quiet and trusting him is brutally hard to do. I mean, much harder than the idea of, I think it would have been easier to try to part the sea. In your life, that may be your mindset. I'd rather try to struggle to physically do this ridiculous thing that there's no way I can do than to actually sit back and trust him and rely on everybody else, including him, to handle something. That's too scary. What if they don't do it? What if they drop the ball? What if I get let down again? Because you've been let down before. This is really tough stuff, and we have to grow. This is why, essentially, it needs to be group therapy. Otherwise, we're the same dysfunctional church group like you were when you were in all the other churches you were in. Only here, we're doing it on Saturday instead of Sunday. Big deal. Told you, the mechanics are important to him, but they're not as important as the other stuff. Because the mechanics simply are an expression of the other stuff. What did James say? I show you my mechanics because of what I believe. Why do you keep the Torah? Because you trust that it does what he says, not because you're just scared of him and obeying him. You're expecting it to bless you, keep you safe, transform you. Who's next? Betty has her hand up first.
Great teaching. You mentioned in the teaching about the clay and the potter. Well, as a mom, my first thought went to when my kids would get some clay, and I'd watch them, and they would pound it. They would squeeze the life out of it. and they would just, to make it pliable. Mm-hmm. And they'd start molding it, but then they realized, well, I didn't make it pliable enough, so now they got to squeeze it again and pound it again. And I look at that and I thought, that's how Yah is working. He is trying to squeeze this life out of us so we can have room for his life. Amen. In us. And we need to be willing to be pliable and allow him to squeeze and to pound. And I'll be honest, I don't like that. And so I find myself becoming stiffer, and as clay sits, it dries, and so now he's got to pound harder, and he's got to squeeze harder. And I'm learning through your teachings that when the squeezing becomes harder than it was before, that maybe I need to, whoa, wait a minute, I need to look at something so this squeezing isn't as painful. And so, but I want to thank you because I am learning a lot.
Amen. Look, take that analogy, well said. Take that analogy and apply it in all different aspects. Like, for example, she said, I realize that he's trying to get the life out of me to give the life. There's only so much room, whatever that capacity is. The more there's you, that means there's less of him. The less is you, there's more of him. Okay? If you got more of the spirit in yourself, dominating everything, then there's no room for the Ruach HaKodesh to do anything. But you have to make room, okay? This is kind of like even Yochanan, you know, the immerser said, I have to diminish so that he can increase. There's only so much capacity, okay? If you're sitting on the throne, he can't. I mean, we use all these analogies. They're all similar type of things. To have the right balance, there has to be room made. And if something's already occupying the space, whether it's a thought space, an emotion space, whatever that space is, there's no room for the other. Who's next? Okay, live stream.
Okay, from Ati, says, what if my thoughts are afflicting me and I'm not sure what to learn from them? How can I pass the threshold in order to grow and get past it? I think this is a quote-unquote not enough like him kind of problem since I struggle with sudden surges of sadness and self-doubt.
That's a good question. I guess I didn't say enough about this earlier that I think it's good that the question kind of triggered it. So what do you do when you find out you're handicapped in some way? Well, there's two basic things that you could be doing. Well, three. Learn as much as you can about your struggle, about your handicap. Find counsel, therapy, somebody that can work with you that understands your problem, what you're struggling with. And then go ahead and even get additional resources that are focused on that problem. Let's say you have, you know, an anger problem. There are books on anger management. There are counseling people that can counsel you with your anger. Let's say you have a problem with anxiety. There are books and teachings on anxiety. There are people that are trained to work with people with anxiety. It doesn't matter what it is, okay? Whatever it is, self-doubt, whatever you're struggling with, okay? There are resources out there for you, and there's people you can counsel with so that you can understand your struggle, and the better you understand it, the more you can use it. Like, that was one of the reasons why I gave you the color code, okay? Well, I didn't create it, right? But that's why I encourage you to do it. What was my instruction when I first gave it to you? So you can understand yourself better, so you can understand other people better. From what point? So you can figure out where you're strong and weak, and then you realize, wow, I've got strengths and weaknesses. Guess what? So does everybody. I got things I do very easily, so does everybody. I got things I struggle with, so does everybody. And so that was part of what any personality test shows you, okay? Where, you know, it may take, you may learn that you're more introverted, you may realize you're more extroverted. You may be more social, you may be less social. You may be more conflict ready, you may be more conflict averse. You may be more, you understand what I'm saying? All of those things you can learn by taking any one of the millions of different, you know, personality tests out there. We chose one that I thought was fairly accurate and very simple. But the whole point was to gain understanding of you and then realize, wow, everybody else did the same thing, so now I can have a better understanding of them. But then the next step is, now what do I do with that? I realize I'm dominant, red, blue, white, yellow, doesn't matter, which means that certain things are easy, but certain things are also, you know, the negative side or whatever. So now what do I do? Well, a lot of you call me because I have a certain amount of expertise in that, okay? In understanding the various colors and what they struggle with and how to help you. But that's the whole point. Learn about it, get more resources, get some resources to help you deal with it, and then hopefully also find an expert, someone with training who can counsel you through it. Did that kind of work? Did that make sense? Okay, so good question, Ati. Appreciate it.
Okay, from Olivier and Jana Hoffman. Says, Rabbi, verse 57, what does it mean when he says, you are my portion, O Yahweh?
I turned the page here, so I lost my page. Let's see, verse 57. Okay, you are my portion. Okay, so when you hear the word portion, think about, you know, people sharing in something, whether it could be an inheritance or like, let's say you bring, you know, a pizza and you got a bunch of kids and they all want to grab. They say, no, this is your portion. So David's saying, Yahweh, you are my portion. I don't need anything else. This is my, I accept you're my portion. I don't need to look at anybody else's portion. I don't have to desire anybody else's portion. That's what you tell the child. Say, no, that's your portion. Stop looking at his. Don't worry about if he has more, he has less. This one has this, this one has that. This is your portion. So David's saying, look, you are my portion. And because that is more than sufficient for everything, I guard your words. I've promised to guard your words. Because remember, he's hearkening back to Exodus 19. I will do all these things, and you are going to take me as your people. That's kind of the agreement. You'll take care of me, and I'm going to do everything you say. You are my portion. You are my inheritance. You are sufficient to everything. Next question. Comment, something.
Okay, from Olivia and Janet Hoffman. Says, verse 65, when it says, you have done good to your servant, whether we were receiving a blessing or a trial, is that correct? Knowing and trusting he rules rightly, is that what he is saying also in verse 71?
Yes. Okay, that's correct. I mean, look, he's saying that you have done good to your servant. Good according to what definition? Good because I think it's good? Or good because he knows it's good, right, correct, good for me, etc.? So by definition, when he causes and allows, ultimately he says all things work for what? The good. Next question or comment?
All right, from Angelic Ewan. Says verse 67, does Yah ever cause the affliction or does he just allow affliction for our good?
And no, both. He causes and allows. Sometimes it's a cause, sometimes he allows. But since you don't know which, and it doesn't really matter which, because either way, if he allowed it, it serves a purpose. Or if he caused it, it serves the same purpose. So as long as you know that he causes, that's emunah. Recognizing that everything that happens in the universe happens because he either caused it or allowed it.
Okay, from Jessica T. Says, is verse 63 a good comparison to Matthew 12, verses 48 through 50?
I'm looking that up. Sure. Okay, so that's the verse where, you know, he answers them saying, well, you know, who is my mother and who are my brothers? And he says, see my mother and my brothers. He points at the taught ones, okay? For whoever does the desire of my father in the heavens is my brother, my sister, and my mother. So yes, that would match up very nicely, okay? The other verse in the psalm was the one about my companions are those that are guarding the commands, the ones that are doing the Torah, okay? Good connection.
All right, from Angelic Ewan, it says, is mental health an affliction? I suffer with major depressive disorder and it's been a great affliction because of it, and I'm trying to figure out my part to fix it because it's a chemical imbalance.
All right. We just took a class on mental health issues. I can tell you that I absolutely think that all mental health practitioners probably struggle with the same thing, which is there's no way to absolutely always in any way nail down the cause of the affliction or the cause of the mental health problem. Is it something you were born with? Is it a chemical imbalance? Is it a response to an outside stimulus like a chemical reaction to a food or a chemical in the environment? We don't know the cause? Is it something that is a response to trauma? Because it could be a response to trauma. You could have been perfectly fine and had a trauma in your in early childhood or sometime in your life, and now you have mental health issues because of the trauma. So whatever it is, my point is that you should make the effort to figure out what it is. The person who's looking at you doesn't need to try to figure out why you have it. They just have to accept the fact that you have it. But for you, the one with it, you should try to figure out the cause of it, because it could be as simple as recognizing that there's a chemistry problem. You could be responding to an environmental stimulus. Okay, I know people that are chemically sensitive or food allergies and things that could really cause emotional responses. It's not just like I eat it and I break out in hives. It could be I eat it and it makes me, you know, emotionally, you know, out of whack. Okay? It could be a hormonal thing. You could have a deficiency that maybe your thyroid or some other one of the glands that produces the certain hormones could be not producing properly, which could also tend to make you emotional. Look, if you're a woman, you understand that when your body's hormones change on a monthly basis, so do your emotions. Okay? Some of the ladies go, well, that never happens to me, but then you might find out, but that's because you have a deficiency hormonally in that area, and so that you never had that experience. And then one day you go and get that hormonal thing fixed, and next thing you know, now all of a sudden you're having some of those emotional challenges that you were so glad you never used to have. Well, you fixed one problem, now you have a different one. Okay? If you've been pregnant, right, your hormones were all different then than they are now when the baby's out. Okay? So emotionally you're different now that you have the baby out. Okay? So some of it could be chemistry. Some of it could be environmental. Some of it could be a response to trauma. Some of it could just be, who knows? There could be, there's so many possibilities. But what I'm saying is if you're the one struggling, you should make the effort to understand your struggle as best you can. And even if you never figure out the cause of it, understand the actual symptom of it so you can deal with the symptom the best you can. So I don't know how I got to the point where I have a stuttering problem, let's say, but I have the stuttering problem. Or I don't know how I got to the point where I have this other emotional thing where I get anxiety or I get anger, I get this or that. Okay, but I understand the symptom is that that's what I end up with. So let me deal with, how do I deal with my symptom even if I can't figure out the cause? Still make the effort to figure out the cause. That's on you. But now all of you dealing with the person, it's not your job to make them go figure out what's making them all messed up that's bothering you. Because their problem is somehow interfering in your life or inconvenient to you or making some sort of problem for you. Okay, walk out your own life. Okay, deal with your own handicap. Okay, I stated a fact. You can argue all you want. All of you are handicapped. Good. That issue's out of the way. Now deal with everybody knowing that that's true and that you need them to have the same compassion for you as you now need to have for them, because all of us have people looking at us going, man, that person's messed up. Everybody is looking at, well, I don't know why. Why do they act like that? Why do they struggle in that area? Every one of you has said somebody's saying that about you and you're saying it about them. I don't know why they're all that way. I wouldn't be that way. Well, they're not you. Okay? So my answer is understand, research, study whatever you have the best you can. And become an expert at your thing. And then maybe if you can find a way to that works for you, you might be able to share that with somebody. Now, here's the other challenge for you, though. Recognize that you could be struggling with A, and so can I. But if they're not caused by the same thing, whatever you did to fix it may not work for me. So have patience. Don't feel like your cure cures everybody's same problem. Okay? Now, you can share that and say, look, this may or may not work for you, but this worked for me. And you say, because I don't know if yours was caused by the same thing mine was caused by, but this is something I did and it worked. And so I'm just offering that to you as an option. As opposed to saying, oh, I could fix that. If it worked for me, this is how you fix it. Well, not unless it was caused the same way yours was caused. It won't fix it if it's not the same. But certainly, you should be in a very gentle way willing to say, you know what? I certainly have no idea, but we've talked about it. You expressed that you had this struggle. I've had that same struggle. And this is what I did that it really helped. It might work for you too. Is that fair? All right, next question.
Okay. Well, I'll jump out here from me in verse 53, and there's related to some people. They were taught, and they're really new. They're coming out of the church like just a month or so, and you said don't binge watch.
I didn't say don't. I said just be careful. There are some that can do it, but there's some that can't.
Okay.
So my recommendation is watch whatever you're going to watch, and just watch it 3 or 4 or 5 times or whatever it takes so that you fully, truly understand that one teaching, so that you are doing it. The first two steps of every teaching are understanding it and doing it. If you watch it enough, eventually you should be able to defend it and maybe even teach somebody. But you need to at least get to step 2 before you go on to something else. Okay? Watch it. You might get that the first time. It may take 2 or 3 times. Don't move on to another teaching till you've watched it enough, whatever that is, that you understand it and you get it and you understand it and that you're able to apply it. And if you can do that in one shot, great. Move on to the next one. Some of them might be that way. Some of them not. Okay? Oh, by the way, if they're listening to a multi-part teaching, that applies to each part. I'm not saying listen to all 11 parts or something, then go back and listen to all 11 parts or something. Listen to all. No, listen to the one part you listened to. Did you understand it enough to move on to the next part? Don't just move on to part 2 because you listened to part 1. Hey, but you still struggled with a few things. Don't go back and listen to part 1 until you fully got it. Then go to part 2. Okay?
Okay. And what I was trying to relate it to was in verse 53, you're talking about the rage.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people I've talked to throughout the years, just like myself, is when we do come out of that, and then we do have an anger towards that, you know, how do we stop that rage, you know, affecting, because then now it's like we hate everything about it, and, you know, and it's, how,
okay,
how is that healthy rage? Can we get up past that?
Okay. So you're talking about people being angry with being lied to and being in a deception and all that other stuff. How'd you end up in the deception? Who allowed you to be in that deception? Who knew you were going to grow up in that deception? Who knew exactly when they were going to call you out of that deception? So you mad at Yahweh? Why are you mad at the church? Why are you mad at your parents, whoever put you into that church? Emunah. So unless you're going to be mad at him, see, that's part of what Emunah is. You can't really be mad at anything because he caused it or allowed it. See, the only one you can be mad at is him. And you can't do that because it's part of how you got to be where you are. So instead, praise him for opening your eyes when he did. And I've met 65-year-olds and 7-year-olds was like, why did he have to wait till I was 70 years old? Well, he could have never done it. What are you upset about? Just be happy he did it. Be happy your eyes are open. Have compassion on those who don't have their eyes open yet. See, but you're mad because this is why. Because you take it personally that somebody deceived you. Somebody lied to you. How dare they? He allowed it. Don't get mad at them. Get mad at him. People say to me all the time, I can't believe you talk about Christians like that. I'm not mad. I never talk about Christians in a bad way. He has allowed them to be in that state. It's not my problem. It's his problem. It's his choice. I trust that he has a plan for that. I explained that in the Millennium and Kingdom teaching. He has a plan for that. I have no problem that he has a plan for all of them. It's not my plan, it's his plan. If it were my plan, it may be very different. Thank Yah, it's not my plan. That goes for all of you. You should thank him that it's not your plan. Because his plan will work perfectly. Yours might not. Have you ever had a plan go wrong? Every one of us has that t-shirt. Okay? And so let's just remember that, right? So when you're new, the tendency is to get very angry because there's still too much of you. Because you're offended, you're mad that somebody lied to you, you're mad that you lived your life in a lie, you're mad that you bought into it. You might have been an elder, a pastor, an usher, a this or that, and you were so into it, and you showed up 5 days a week, and you served, and you did this, and you preached and you knocked on doors and whatever else you did, and now you're embarrassed and you're angry. Why? Well, it's still because there's too much of you. But why are you angry? He allowed you to do that. In that whole system, you learn to be very passionate. You learn to be caring. You learn to work hard. You learn to do the best you could under the way you understood him to be. What was wrong with that? I mean, some of you worked and did really, I mean, you did a lot of work in your churches. All right, so you learned how to do some stuff. So why are you angry? You think you got it rough? Think of all the pastors that come out of the churches and now they feel like, man, I taught people wrong all those years. That's on me. Well, yes and no, but he allowed you to do that. So then you got to let that go. Sure, you might feel guilty, but you got to recognize he could have stopped you anytime he wanted to. If you want to own anything, own how long it took you to finally let the microphone go. That was your reluctance part, instead of you going quickly, as David said, to go do it. You can own that part because you liked being in front, you liked having the mic, you liked what you, whatever it was, or not trusting him because you've been a full-time pastor and you had your bills paid and everything else. Now what are you going to do to start with? Own whether or not you're ready to put the mic down and sit under somebody and be quiet and learn something before you go and grab a hold of a mic. That you can own, but don't own all the stuff you did till he opened your eyes. Just commit not to do it anymore. Well, if he had opened my eyes when I was this blah, I would have not had that bad thing I did in my life, and I wouldn't have done this dumb thing, and I wouldn't have. That's true. But he allowed it. It's part of how you became you. Okay? Don't get mad at everything and all the church. Get mad at him if you want, and that's dumb. That'll undermine everything you're trying to do. You need to trust him. Well, why did he let all this terrible stuff happen to me? Well, take it up with him. He could have left you in it, but he didn't. He could have left you there. I say that as loud as I can. He could have left you there, but he didn't. But then he brought me out of that, and then he let me get, you know, this bad thing or that. Part of your growth. You live in a fallen world, as they say. So I expect bad things are going to happen in a fallen world. But you know what to do with what the bad experiences are. You can learn from them, grow from them, transform from them, where other people just sit there going, well, it's terrible stuff just happened to me. And you go, ooh, this is an opportunity. I can learn something out of this. Same terrible stuff. You lost your job, the other person lost their job. But you can look at it differently. Okay? You got cancer, they got cancer. You got this, they got this. Well, but you can look at it differently. Right? Your child did this, their child did that. Well, it doesn't matter. In the world and in the body, same stuff happens. But you can look at it different. Right? Just because you're in the body doesn't mean you're exempt now from stuff happening. You can just understand it better and realize that it's an opportunity for something that the other people don't realize. All right, one more because I just took a long time on that one.
Okay, from Olivia and Jenna Hoffman. It says, Rabbi, in verse 73, when King David says, you formed me, could it be he means you know me? You know I am stubborn, and so he is asking for his mercy to show him in the way only the Maker can.
I think that's a decent interpretation. Look, if you're going to go with the idea of you formed me, you could be saying it from, I don't think David is using, well, you made me this way. And Yahweh says, yeah, and that's why I'm letting you go through all this stuff right now to fix that. Because there's going to be some big muscles you're going to form struggling through and developing getting through that. And you're going to need those muscles for something else coming later in the future. Because you could be screaming out at them, what are you messing with me for? You made me this way. Well, maybe not. Maybe he allowed you to become that way. He formed you to go through a life journey. He allowed or caused aspects of your life journey, still knowing full well where you'd end up and when he would open your eyes, etc. Do we understand that? Because some of the life journey causes some of your problems. Some of them are not born with. Some of them are, right? We got a lot of people out there that are where they are because of trauma. You know, something happened in their life that was trauma that they did not handle well and triggered and caused some sort of a handicap. Emotionally, right? So he allowed that to happen, or he caused it to happen. Why would he do that to me? I don't know. All I know is that it's ultimately going to be for your good, if you will embrace it that way. But you have to embrace it that way. How can I embrace it that way? Not that way, you're not. You'll never get there that way. You can hit your knees and your face to the floor and just say, Abba, I trust you. I don't understand any of this. I don't know why you would allow this to happen in my life, or why you would allow this to be, or cause, or why, but I trust you. And I'm okay with whatever you would do. I'm yours. Have your way. Do what you want to do. And then maybe, who knows, he may give you some answers. He may fix a few things. He may heal a few. Who knows? I don't know. I'm not going to sit up here and give you some, if you would just do this, your life will just all be. But it's still what you need to do. Whatever he's going to do in response to that, I have no idea. It's going to be different for each one of you, and it depends on what your deal is. And what he knows you need. Never forget, he doesn't care a thing about giving you what you want until after he makes sure he gave you everything you need. That's not to say he doesn't want to give you what you want. But his main thing is to give you what you need. And I don't mean just need like you need shelter and food. I mean need to become him. But you need to be in the kingdom. You're here to get there. Okay? So he's going to give you everything you need to go from here to there. And it might be an experience that grows you in a big way in some area of your life because you need that to get there. Or maybe you need that so that someone else can be helped to get there because now you can help them where you couldn't until you went through it. Think of that. Whatever you're going through, if you get through it, think of how you can now help somebody else get through what you just got through. Because you've been through. You know where the landmines are. You know the roadmap out of the problem. Like I said, that doesn't always match perfectly for everybody, but you can help somebody that has your thing the way you had it. And he may just lead you to, or someone to you, or you to them, where you will actually be able to bless somebody. And by the way, you may run into somebody who's exactly had that already journey, and they got to help you. And why were they able to help you? Because they've been there. You know, when my wife had a miscarriage many, many years ago, you know where they sent us? To a group of people that had miscarriages so that we could all talk to each other and understand, especially those that had already gone through it and had gotten to a place now where they were at peace and they can encourage and say, I understand. See, if you haven't had it, the person might say, well, you can't know what I'm going through. How can you know what I'm going through? You don't have this. Like a husband saying to his wife, I understand what you went through with that pregnancy. No, you don't. You have no idea. Okay? Only that what you saw. Okay? But you don't know. But someone else who's been through it, whatever it is that you have, find some people that survived it, got through it, and can tell you that you can get there. Okay? Or find some people that never had it taken away, but found a way to have peace with it. Because the whole point is the shalom, isn't it? Even if you don't find the cure or the treatment or the therapy that fixes the problem, but finding a way to have peace with your handicap, whatever that is. Because he may not take it away, and there may not be a cure, either emotionally or physically or whatever it is, but can you get to a place where you're okay with that? Where you can have peace with it? That's the key, amen? Oh, man, I think that should close us up with that. Okay. So.